Alright, I'm gonna go ahead and call this city council meeting to order. It is January 5th, 2021, 6 PM. We are meeting online pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-2074. And Mayor Reese's December 10, 2020 written determination that conducting an electronic meeting with an anchor location presents a substantial risk to the health and safety of those who may be present at the anchor location. So let's go ahead and start out with an approval of the meeting's agenda.
I will move that we approve the meeting's agenda.
I got a motion by Councilmember Anderson. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Councilmember Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Meeting's agenda is approved. We are gonna now move to item number three, which is public comment. For public comment, I believe we're having people use the raise hand feature or make a quick note in the chat that they want to have some time to comment. And I'll give you a minute or two to do that. And then Chandler, do you see any? Let me know if you see.
I don't.
Okay. All right. Then in that case, we'll go ahead and close public comment. Let's go ahead and move on to reports, presentations, and recognitions. We'll start with, who do we have here for?
Wendy Hart is here to do the presentation on the voting options.
Okay, so Wendy, I'm going to give you 15 minutes to do the presentation, and then I'm going to open it up to the council to ask you questions. And so let's go ahead and when you're ready, I guess you're coordinating this with Chandler, we're changing the slides and everything. So.
Yeah.
So,
we'll try this. So I just appreciate your letting me come, and thanks to Kelly for reaching out. So a couple of weeks ago, I heard a statement, and I think it's important to keep that in mind as we go through this presentation. And the statement was that complexity favors the well-connected. And so as things get more complex, that's an important dynamic to keep in mind. So first of all, ranked choice voting. I would ask, is it a solution to fix elections or the next level of fixed elections? There's an organization called Fair Vote, and that sounds great, right? Fair Vote sounds good. Ranked choice voting is seen as vote your conscience and also get to vote for whichever mainstream candidate is more likely to win. It's kind of a have your cake and eat it too. But like most things in life, the devil is in the details. And usually if something sounds too good to be true, it's not. So we can start the presentation. Ranked choice voting, it dilutes third party candidates by unequally providing some voters greater voting power at the cost of other voters. It incentivizes campaigns to be less honest, kind of water down the message. It is unfair in multi-seat races like city council, and I'm going to spend a significant amount of time on that today because I think that's where you need to see it most. It redefines majority with a lack of transparency, and it is being promoted by global power elites, and that should give you concern about the motivation of this top-down effort. So let's look at each of those points in more detail. Next. So, first, ranked choice voting makes it seem like you can avoid having to make the difficult decision of who to vote for by providing backup votes. These additional votes get to be realized by voters who choose the candidates with the fewest votes. The loser's second vote then influences which of the winning candidates proceeds in the count. And proponents like this idea of some people getting more than one vote because it supposedly allows people to vote their conscience and still get a vote in the more likely to win candidate race. So if I want to vote for Jill but still prefer Hillary over the rest, under ranked choice voting, I can feel good about voting for Jill and still end up voting for Hillary in the end. There is actually no benefit to Jill because she can't win until her support approaches a majority. But it doesn't detract from Hillary at all. In fact, it is almost the same as voting for Hillary outright. It just makes you feel better about it. But in reality, this process dilutes third-party candidates' leverage in actually splitting a vote. Maine adopted ranked choice voting after two consecutive elections where the Republican won because a strong third-party candidate split the Democrat vote. The powers that be wanted to make sure that a powerful third party didn't split the vote again. Ranked choice voting pretends that third parties have a chance, but make sure that they don't. Additionally, being given multiple opportunities to vote isn't shared with voters whose first choice was one of the majority candidates. The final vote can be disproportionately and unfairly determined by voters whose position is not shared by the majority of voters. Next. Second, all the ranked choice voting media explains how it will make elections nicer and less divisive, and that sounds great. And I actually agree with the claim, but the nice that ranked choice voting seeks for will probably come at the cost of honesty. Ranked choice voting changes the relationship between candidates and the voters. It must, and if it didn't, there would be no need for a change. Next. If a candidate is seeking to not only get a core audience, but also the second choice or third choice of losing voters, the candidate's message will need to be generic enough for both. So, next. Generic can be a nice word for, you know, it could be end up being more dishonest. So, for example, hope and change sounds nice, but we have to find out from experience what it actually means, because apart from sounding nice, it lacks specificity. In contrast, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall is pretty clear. So, next. Ronald Reagan said we should raise, quote, a banner of no pale pastels but bold colors which make it unmistakably clear where we stand on all of the issues troubling the people, end quote. If the people know unmistakably where candidates stand, then there is truly consent of the governed when we vote. If it's nice-sounding platitudes, did we really consent? Ranked choice voting will take both nice and obnoxious candidates and incentivize them to be more generic but less honest. We will be led by the purveyors of mediocre campaigns lacking the energy of a people inspired by bold truth. Do we want to elect someone who is lukewarm in their convictions or someone who will stand and defend their principles against all odds? And I ask you to keep in mind that as we run for elections now, we're running under a system that has engendered more of that straightforwardness. People who are running now under the system will not automatically change overnight, but in 10 or 15 years, you're going to see a greater chance of watering down the message. If you can't bring the passion and enthusiasm for your message to the electorate, you should have no right to govern. And how do you have true consent of the governed if they don't know what you stand for? Third, the numbers don't add up. Ranked choice voting is the Common Core math equivalent of voting. One person equals one vote, that's too easy. Let's make it difficult and less transparent. Ranked choice voting means that some voters are more equal than others. Kelly knows this, some of you don't know this. I'm a math major, so I could go into bogging you down with details on this. But the short summary is that ranked choice voting in a multi-seat race like city council doesn't always allow for one person equals one vote for every open seat. Two, it muddies the water, making our choices less clear. And three, it redefines what a majority is. As I go through these numbers, bear in mind that if you can't follow them easily, then the odds of the electorate following them are also in question. And that means that transparency and accountability are compromised. For a city council, the most important aspect is to understand how multi-seat races are impacted. Next. Sadly, they are impacted in an unfair way. As I go into the detail on this process, it may take a while to see the issue, and I'm happy to go into greater detail with any of you later on. But just like this picture of the old woman, young woman, when you first saw it, you could only see one side. Now that you're used to it, you can see that, and that's kind of how this process is. When you look at it, it may take a while. Next. In 2018, Lehigh City did a test of ranked choice voting with their city staff. They discovered in multi-seat races like city council that not every voter was able to weigh in on all three seats. Of those who voted for certain particular options, so if you look on the left-hand side of the screen, the people who all chose H 13 people only got one vote counted, 16 people got two votes counted, and 11 got to weigh in on all three options. Because of how they voted compared to everyone else, their first choice vote was selected as one of the three, but they never got to weigh in on any of the others. If ranked choice voting is used for a city council race, it really should be met with a lawsuit. Next. Payson and Vineyard have already used ranked choice voting for multi-seat city council races, and everyone was supposedly happy. However, let's go into the details. In every multi-seat race, the people who ranked the last candidate elected as their first choice only ever got their vote for that single candidate counted. And that's different from the voter choosing to only rank one candidate. Your vote's importance or lack thereof is determined by your fellow voters and not you. Next. So let's follow the first choice. First choice Linda Carter voter. She's on the top. And remember, you wouldn't know that this was going to happen while you were filling out your ballot. You can only see that this has occurred after the fact. So you see these 691 voters, they all ranked Linda as their first choice. Note that all the other candidates have their ballots redistributed except the ultimate winner. Some voters may have had their first four choices counted in just this council race alone, but Linda's first choice voters only got to vote for Linda, who loses the seat to Doug Welton. Next. Seat two, Doug won the first seat, so his first choice voters have their votes redistributed to their second choice candidates. Linda picks up 285 voters from Doug, but her original 691 voters have still only ever been counted as voting for Linda. Every other candidate's voters are redistributed and Brian wins, but those original 691 Linda voters still have only ever been counted as voting for Linda. Next. Seat three, Linda wins. Next. So those 691 voters are happy because their first choice candidate is now on the city council. However, they didn't actually get three votes counted, but they got their single vote for Linda counted three times. Whereas many of the first choice Scott Pinkham voters, he's on the bottom there, got their slate of choices counted multiple times, and in some instances, their ballot could have been processed up to eight times, so that he would have had eight different people and they've gone around. So again, I could go into that later, but all right. 25% of Payson voters only got one vote counted for all three council seats. So next. Vineyard. Similarly, up at the top, you see 277 Tice Flake voters. They only got their vote for Tice counted, but there were two seats. Next. Again, it's about 25% of the people that only got their first choice vote that was counted. So if my vote is counted three times for the same, all three seats, and it's just one vote, but my neighbor gets to have three or four votes that are counted, this violates the principle of fairness in elections. But the average voter would never know that this discrepancy occurred or was systematic. And the only reason I knew to look for it in Payson and Vineyard was because I had watched the Lehigh City presentation in 2018. And even then, Lehigh City didn't quite understand the magnitude of what they had discovered. So ranked choice voting should be discounted out of hand on this point alone, but there's more. Next. Ranked choice voting destroys, So ranked choice voting destroys our clear choice and understanding of how the election process works. The less popular supporters get a do-over and determine the direction of the outcome. Cato Institute showed that a 4% change in preference by third-party voters in a three-way race can determine who wins, but it's not always clear as a voter how that would work. So this is a hypothetical scenario, and it's simplified for this demonstration. Next. So 35% of the voters rank Mark first, then John, and then Tom. 34% rank Tom, then John, and then Mark. And 31% rank John, then Mark, and then Tom. With ranked choice voting, John is eliminated. The John voters get their second choice and Mark wins. Next. However, if you compare just John to Mark head-to-head, 65% of the voters prefer John over Mark. So Mark won, but more people like John than Mark. Next. But if just 4% of the Tom voters switch their first vote to John instead of Tom, then John wins. So ranked choice voting empowers a select group of voters, those whose first choice lost the worst, to have greater influence in the final outcome, and it doesn't always yield the candidate that most people prefer over the others when compared head to head. Next. Ranked choice voting redefines what a majority is. Let's start with 24 voters. A majority under this current system is 50% plus one. Next. With 24 voters, we would need 13 votes. Next. Ranked choice voting goes through multiple rounds to reduce the candidates down to two finalists. If you don't vote for one of those finalists, then your ballot is removed or exhausted, and it's as if you never voted at all. So if you have four exhausted ballots, next, then instead of needing 13 to win, you only need 11. 11 out of 24 is 45.8%. Ranked choice voting redefines majority to mean a majority of all votes in the final round of counting. This gives preference to some votes over others. It's not fair, it's not transparent, and it's unnecessarily convoluted. Everyone's vote should count the same and not be ranked as more valid depending on their first vote. Next.
Real quick, Wendy, we've got about a minute left.
Oh, okay, let's skip through that. Next. I just want you to say, don't use it to replace primary voting. Finally, my final point is to ask who's paying for this issue. Fair Vote Next is pushing this on a national stage. They are funded by a lot of big institutions such as Ford, Joyce, and Rockefeller, and they also support eliminating the Electoral College under National Popular Vote. So next. This is the biggest concern that I have in general, is that currently the counties certify the votes. Under ranked choice voting, you can't add votes together, so they have to be centralized in their counting process. So a multi-county seat, federal offices, statewide elections, if we adopt it statewide, would go up to a centralized statewide counting procedure. And if we get rid of the Electoral College, which FairVote hopes to do, presidential elections would all have to be centralized nationally if you use ranked choice voting. So it eliminates your checks and balances. So finally, ranked choice voting sells the promise of nicer elections at the cost of honest disagreement. It neuters third-party influence. It is mathematically flawed. And those who began the promotion of this process nationally, like Fair Vote, may use it to undermine the checks and balances of our constitutional structure. So if our republic has voting problems, none of them stem from the premise of one person equals one vote. So ranked choice voting is not a fair vote nor a wise choice. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and open it up to any questions from the council. I'd just like to note that being a math major myself, I do understand a lot of the things that you're pointing out there, I guess.
Yeah. We could chat.
So I particularly was waiting for cities to actually use this in their elections, so I'm glad you brought those examples of Payson and Vineyard into it, because I never want to be the guinea pig city who does something like this. And from what you presented, it looks like, you know, it didn't exactly go the way it should have gone. But I personally am in no rush to do ranked choice voting. I want it to marinate for a while to see how it works. And I'm not in any rush to change our voting system in the city. That's just my opinion.
Oh, Mike, I have a question. You have to go either all or none. I mean, because it makes more sense to me in a primary situation than the actual election. What's the deal? Is, I mean, is the state given us guidelines as far as all or none or what?
My understanding from talking to Highland City is that you can choose to do it however you want. But I wouldn't look to me as being definitive on that.
My question on that, Mike, is if for me the only reason I would even consider something like this is to save us the money of a primary. So if we're not doing that, there's no point to it.
And that's what we had talked about before. It does eliminate a primary, but you got the point is you could have 10 candidates in the general election, which would be kind of hard for most people to decipher, especially in a local city. It's already hard enough for most residents to even get their arms around it.
Yeah, and I think we struggle. I think some of my concerns are that we struggle to engage voters already. And I know we just went through this process as delegates for the seat that Mike Kennedy just won. And most of the delegates, not all, but most of them are pretty savvy. They've been around for a while. They're delegates for a reason. I know I did a ton of research. I did a ton of research on ranked choice voting. And I was still a little confused. And so I feel like if really engaged voters are confused, are we even going to get people who are like, I'm not even going to do that because I have no clue what's going on now. Do I vote for 3 people? Do I vote for all 10 people? And I also think, and this is just me, but I think that, we might get 10 people because they didn't have to run for a primary, which might to them feel like, well, I didn't really have to campaign and I didn't really have to, tell people what I was about because I'm just going to be on a list of 10 and I might just fall backwards into a city council seat because people are confused about who I am, or or even how to vote. You can vote accidentally, and that bothers me.
Can I weigh in? Because I skipped over the primary thing a little bit. So as an unknown candidate, it's really hard if you don't have a primary, especially if you're running up against like incumbents, because if nobody knows you, you don't have money, you don't have name recognition. One of the best ways is to do the door-to-door thing and knock on doors, and that takes time. And like you were saying, we struggle to get people involved. And if you don't have a primary election and you're knocking on doors in June, nobody's paying attention to you, right? They're like, don't bother me if I don't have to vote till November. But if you have a primary election, all of a sudden there's a percentage of voters that will be paying attention, and they'll start paying attention, a week before the election or when they get their ballot in June. But that gives an advantage, well, not an advantage, but it allows a little bit more fair playing field for grassroots, unknown, just random people who say, which I think our system was set up to be just your average person can say, hey, I think I want to run for public office. And I think we're well served for just the average person and not necessarily I have to be well connected to run for office in that way. So, yeah.
I understand exactly what you're saying there. But the other thing that a little bit bothers me is that it does lend itself to sort of like groupthink, like, hey, the 3 of us are running together, we're all part of this one group, vote for all 3 of us. I've never really liked that. I mean, I know it's happened in our city, but I kind of feel like people should run on their individual merits, not be part of this group because, everybody knows that person better, so I want to tag onto their shirttails or whatever, coattails.
Yeah, along with that, Mike, I was going to say, like in this last delegate thing that we did, it was interesting. There was a lot of, because people didn't understand it, I think there was a lot of strategy. There was a lot of strategizing and stuff about how can we take advantage of this ranked choice voting instead of just talking about the issues. It was the first time that I've been involved in an election where people were really just wondering how to game the system, which is, I think not to their fault, but to ranked choice voting's fault, that there's a system to be gamed.
And they claim there's not, but
I do my own thing, right? Because my vote counts one time.
And I agree that because if you can approach someone and say, hey, if I'm not your number one vote, can I be your number two? It kind of skews the outcome of an election, and I'm not a fan of that. It's like you get to choose one, pick one.
Right.
And then the highest vote getter gets the place. All right, Mike, go ahead.
No, I said I agree with that. That's exactly how I feel. Like one vote, one person, you know.
Yeah.
I think it makes candidates accountable and it makes voters accountable. You
got it. If you have a position, you have to work for it. You, like she said, like Wendy said, you've got to knock doors, you've got to work hard. I mean, you can rank choice, you can basically do nothing and still get elected. And I'm not sure I'm a fan of that.
It's also harder on the back end to audit. So just back to what I showed you with Payson and Vineyard, you got three council members, but you have to dig in and see and, you know, and where it could be a small number of people that influence the outcome. That's going to make some people potentially resentful if everybody they know voted for one person, and because of the way, you know, oh, the second and the third and whatever played out, they don't see that. You know, we accept our guy losing if you feel that it's fair, and if you know that you're like the only one in your neighborhood that voted for that person and they lose, you go, well, okay, that's fair, I get it. But if everybody in your neighborhood and you go around and everyone you talk to is voting for this person and then they lose, then you kind of wonder, and the auditing mechanism isn't all that transparent, and I think it would be hard for people to follow, and so that would be a concern. Back end.
I'm curious about what Brian thinks. I haven't heard Brian's voice. Where's Brian?
I don't know. I agree with those who express the sentiment that it's not something that you rush to. Sorry. Sorry about that. I'm fine kind of waiting and kind of just seeing more experiences. I think we have a small sample with Payson and Vineyard. I had a positive experience with it in the Republican primary, but that's limited to that one experience. And so I to transition to some thing makes an effort to explain to our residents. I think that time is only favorable to decide if and how we want to do that.
I agree.
But I'm open to it, but I don't think it's something that we need to make happen in the next year or two.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, me too.
I think right now transparency is a huge issue for us as cities with everything that's going on, and I wouldn't want to have to try to explain this to a resident. And so if I couldn't, I'd feel really uncomfortable having voted to do it that way.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Oh, you're welcome.
You.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go ahead and close out item four and move on to item number five, the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I'll motion to approve the consent agenda.
All right. Motion made by Councilmember Smith. Second.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. That passes. Moving on to city reports and business, let's start with Chandler.
Yes, thank you, Council. Just wanted you to be aware, normally during this time I bring up to speed on a lot of recreation notes that are happening within the community. Tonight we kicked off our junior jazz season, and just for some background, because of the nature of the games of basketball, they're indoor, they're close quarters, we are requiring the masks be worn by all spectators and participants when they're not playing. And then we've also limited spectators to one person per participant in order to save space, because it is tight quarters. We're trying to utilize as much space as we can while allowing for social distancing and complying with the state and state guidelines that have been issued. However, like I said, we kicked this off tonight. We've already had issues with the public, a few members of the public that have refused to wear masks, and it got a little heated tonight, so I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it. But I want you to be aware of the requirements because they are games are being played at public schools, and the public schools are under the state mandate that masks be worn. So I just want you to be aware of that. I'll be filling you in as information comes available. Another item, mayor applications are due on January 15th at noon. Those are available on the Cedar Hills website. So we look for those to come in, and they'll be shared with the council as we get them. And then with everything that's going on, normally about now we start our budget retreat and timeline. That timeline will need to be changed until that vacancy is filled. So look for some last minute modifications on the city's budget process, but we'll keep you informed as we get information. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey Chandler, would you mind taking off the slide off the screen?
Yes.
There you go. All right. So let's go down the list here in order. I got it on the screen. I don't have any updates. Council member Anderson.
Thank you. So I attended my Central Utah 911 meeting, and just by way of information, we elected new chairs for the 2021-2022 years. And that went well. It's a really well-run board, and I've really enjoyed being on this board. The people who work at Central Utah 911 are really dedicated to making that a successful venture, and it's, you know, they changed from Anyway, they've had a lot of changes, and I think they've weathered them pretty well. They're good with their budget, and they're very responsible. I also attended my Utah Lake Commission meeting, and that's always interesting to find out what's going on at Utah Lake and things they're trying to do to improve the algal bloom and increase the June sucker population. I don't know if you know, they're building these natural habitats for June suckers, because they go, I didn't know this, they go up the Provo River and they spawn, and then they come back down and they go back into the lake. Well, that hasn't been happening because they don't have a healthy natural course to get up there, and so they've been stopping the June sucker from hatcheries. So they're trying to create natural habitat for those June suckers to multiply in the lake so that the lake's health will improve. They're a big big component of the lake's health, and so they're spending a lot of time and money down there making that happen. They're also trying to complete a trail that will go all the way around the lake, so you can get on and bike all the way around. Once you get past south of Provo, it's going to take a long time, maybe 20 years till that's finished, but a lot of it is completed. Vineyard's helping do that, American Fork's helping do that, so it's pretty exciting. The last thing from that meeting is they have a photo contest every year, Utah Lake, and the top five winners, the city, we get to pick a canvas. They're going to print a canvas for us to put in our office. And since they sent me the email, I sent it over to the city. Colleen and a couple people in the office got to help choose which picture. So you'll see a new picture of Utah Lake in the front office of the city. That's all I have.
Very cool. Thank you. Council Member Smith.
So I have the YCC assignment, and I just wanted to report on what they did. The kids did a really good job of trying to come up with something that would work with COVID. They were really creative, I thought. And they did a scavenger hunt around the city so you could go and see people's lights. And then we asked the city if we could do some gift cards to businesses in Cedar Hills. So we did one to each business in Cedar Hills. And so people could take a picture of themselves and tag the YCC, and then that's how they entered. And so if they found each thing, and so what the kids did is instead of an address, they told you, like on Silver Lake, you were looking for like a giant minion. I'll give that example because it's my neighbor across the street. And so then you would take your picture in front of it, and that was an entry. And so then people could enter. And then along the way, which I thought was really great of this particular group, it says a lot about their leadership, is that they wanted to have some service components included. So they asked you at one spot to do a card for the residents of Charleston. at another spot, you could leave a card or a note of encouragement or thankfulness to our firefighters at our office in Cedar Hills, at our fire station in Cedar Hills. And then they had a spot where you could drop off a toy for Toys for Tots. So I love that when they thought of the idea, which I thought was super fun in the first place, they also wanted to add this component of the ways that they could help residents serve each other. So anyway, I thought it was really great, fun thing for families. I'd love to see even that part just continue because I think we can add that easily to anything else, even if we hopefully get to have Santa back again. But I loved how they pivoted. They had a great attitude, and they still really wanted to serve the residents. So I appreciate them, and especially their leaders, Stephanie Martinez and Amy Augustus, do just a really phenomenal job. This was my first time getting to do some Zoom meetings with them, and they just do a really great job with the group. So that's my report. Thank you.
That sounds awesome. I didn't know they were doing that. I would have jumped in. At least my voice would have. Councilmember Miller.
I don't have anything this time.
All right, and then Councilmember Geddes.
Mike, we couldn't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me at all?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, nothing to report.
All right, great, thank you. All right, so that closes up the city reports and business. Let's move on to our scheduled items. And the first item, number 8, is review action on acceptance of the 2020 fiscal year audits.
Hey, Mayor, Council, we have, just say Council, we have Stephen Raleigh here from Kennington Christensen. He represents our auditing firm, and I'm going to turn the time over to him. Stephen, do you need me to share the screen of anything?
If you want to show the audit report so they can kind of read along on a couple of the reports, that's fine. Yeah, and I can tell you which page.
Okay, I'll pull it up and you just shut up the page and I'll find it.
Excellent. Okay, so the first page, page 10.
Okay, give me one second.
Yeah, so as you're getting through that, as you mentioned, my name is Steve Rowley. I was the engagement partner on the audit of Cedar Hills financial statements for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2020. And our responsibility as auditors is to plan and perform the audit and to give an opinion on the financial statements, whether they are materially correct. The responsibility of the city and management is to oversee the accounting processes, the financial reporting, and all the day-to-day operations that result in these numbers that you end up seeing each month or quarter as you receive financial statements. So you're responsible for the internal controls that are related to the money coming into the city, the money going out, and as part of the council, you're over that. You're who we consider charged with governance, and so that's who we are reporting to. And as a reminder, we do work for the council, so if there are any questions or concerns that come up regarding the financial statement audit, feel free to reach out directly to us. And likewise, if we have any concerns or issues during the audit, we'd reach out to you. And as you didn't hear too much from us, that's a good sign. So page 10 here is our independent auditor's report. And this is kind of the pinnacle of why we do the audit, is to give our opinion. So the bottom of this page is a paragraph starting with opinions. It states, in our opinion, the basic financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the respective financial position of the governmental activities, the business type activities, each major fund, and the aggregate remaining fund information of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah as of June 30th, 2020, and so on, and all the other funds and all that other information, in accordance with generally accepted accounting standards, principles. So, in essence, that's what we call an unmodified opinion. That's a clean opinion on the financial statements. So, the information contained in this report and the financial statements is materially correct, and you can rely on those. Second page of this report talks about the required supplementary information. So, some of this is the information in the back of the report. It contains the pension schedules. The most important part of the required supplementary information is the management's discussion and analysis, and that's a very good comparative analysis prepared by Charles to kind of give an overview of what happened during fiscal 20 and how that compares to fiscal 19 and the reason for some of those changes. It provides some good highlights, some good budgetary comparison. It's a great introductory part of the document to read through if you don't just want to look at numbers, because not everybody's a numbers person. But what it talks about here in this part of the report is that we look at the RSI. It's not specifically audited, but it is reconciled back to the underlying information that has been audited. Then the next part just talks about some of the other schedules in the back, the statistical section and everything. Those aren't audited because it's not a required part of the financial statements. The last part of this report, it just mentions there's another report that's required by government auditing standards. So we'll go ahead and jump to that report, which is page 115. And this report, so government auditing standards is a step above generally accepted auditing standards. So what we do, what's required with this is we look over the internal controls over financial reporting. So as I mentioned, this kind of how's the money being tracked when it's coming in and going out and all of that. We look at those internal controls to see if there's any weaknesses or deficiencies that would have a material effect on the financials. So even though we don't give an opinion on those internal controls, as it states in that third paragraph under internal control, where it says our consideration, the last sentence or the second to last sentence says, you know, given these limitations, which basically is we don't look at every transaction, we don't give an opinion. We did not identify any deficiencies in internal control that we'd consider to be material weaknesses. So that's as good as an opinion you can get. So we did look over the controls. We didn't identify anything that was of concern. And the second part of this report is related to compliance and other matters with laws, rules, regulations, things like that, that could have a material effect on the financials if there was, you know, non-compliance with it. So same thing here. We don't give an opinion on that, but the last sentence in that paragraph says that our test is full of no instances of non-compliance or other matters required to be reported under government auditing standards. So that's a good report to have. We didn't identify any issues with your financial reporting, the internal controls, or anything like that. So there's a third report, and it's the state compliance audit report, and that's on page 117. So just the next. Okay, so this is a report required by the state auditor's office. They send out a guide that says, for all governmental entities in the state of Utah, you're required to get tested in these specific areas. And those are the indented areas there, you know, budgetary compliance, fund balance, et cetera. And similar to the last report, we look at this in two different ways. We look at the internal controls over compliance with those areas, as well as specific instances of compliance within those areas. And just like previously, we don't give an opinion on the internal controls over compliance. But in this instance, we do give an opinion on the actual compliance. So the bottom of this first page is our opinion on the compliance with those compliance requirements. And it states that in all material respects, the state compliance requirements, you know, the city complied with the state compliance requirements referred to above. However, on the next page, there is a reference to an instance of non-compliance that we did identify, and we'll look at that in just a moment. The second part of this report is that internal control over compliance. So just like before, we looked at the controls over compliance, but we don't give an opinion on it. And it also states that we did not find any weaknesses or deficiencies in those internal controls over those compliance requirements. So as we skip to the next page, this should be the findings. Well, the finding, single finding. So as we went through the state compliance testing for the fund balance limitation, we noted that the city's general fund balance was over the 25% maximum unrestricted fund balance limit. And essentially, as we got looking into that and talking with Charles and city staff, it was fairly clear that the reason for that was the late arrival of the CARES Act money and really not knowing how we were allowed to spend that money until after it was too late to do any budget amendments. So because of that, there was more money in the general fund than there normally would have been at being unrestricted. So that put the city over that 25% rule. And so the city management have their response there. This is going to be a fairly common finding for a lot of cities because pretty much everybody has the same situation where We all received the CARES Act money very late in the game. Some as late as, you know, June 28th, June 29th, and even some after the fact. So it's going to impact a lot of people. So you're not alone in this for sure. And I don't see this as, you know, a serious issue of any kind, because it basically goes away, you know, by the end of July or August once all the money is spent. So that's the finding. We are required to report that. So that is there for your consideration. Essentially, the other things that we're required to go over as part of this is just, how did the audit go? The audit went really well. Even with COVID, we were still able to come on site. We took the proper measures to be socially distant and wear masks and things like that. But staff at the city were great to work with. Charlotte does an excellent job every year in preparing the CAFR. Not many cities your size do a CAFR, so it's a, you know, it's a mark of achievement that you're doing that. So very well done. We always appreciate working with the staff of Cedar Hills. They're always very timely in responding to our requests. They were happy to give us everything we'd asked for, so we had no difficulties doing the audit. That is our report, and I'm welcome to answer. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, I'll open up questions to the council.
I don't have a question, but a comment. I actually went through all 125 pages and not loving that. I did appreciate the ones where it gave me an evaluation of like, what does this mean? What is actually going on? You know, being a new, this is my first year on a budget for Cedar Hills. And so I appreciated all the explanations and nuances that go in, because just seeing the numbers wouldn't have been helpful for me. And so I just want to commend Charles. I know he does a really good job, and same with staff. Like, we always hear, I really appreciate that we always hear that staff works so good with anybody who needs something from them. And anyway, I just wanted to say I really appreciate the report, because I could actually understand it. So kudos.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to thank Charles and his team, and you too as well, Mr. Rowley, for your efforts on the city's behalf. I am always afraid that someone is going to lure Charles away, and then what will we do? That's my biggest fear right now. But anyway, I appreciate the effort that goes into this report every year.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Definitely echo those sentiments. Anybody else from the council?
It's a great job. It's like a broken record player year after year. And it just, I wonder if you guys have Charles on your payroll or something like that. I always wonder that, because it just seems too good to be true. But it seems to be year after year. So good job, Charles.
So, thank you. Thanks, Stephen. Welcome. He's very good at turning around what, you know, I put together the report, and he's very responsive at reviewing it and getting it done. It was done a few weeks ago, but he does a good job.
Thank you.
All right. Just thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Charles. Thank you, Council. That's all we have for comments. I'll go ahead and accept the motion to accept the 2020 annual financial report.
I'll make the motion that we accept the 2020 annual financial report.
All right. Motion made by Councilmember Geddes. Second.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Smith. I believe we just do all in favor. We don't need a roll call for this. So, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Report accepted. Moving on to item number 9, the last item, review action on resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to official fees, bonds, fine schedules, city of Cedar Hills. I'm turning this over to Charles or Jim.
Me, and then I'm going to let Jeff speak.
Okay.
This stems from the organizational chart change that we've done, where we've split off Jeff from being the public works director to solely the building official, and then the public works director. In doing so, many of our residential plan inspections will be done in-house. The inspections will also be done by our own staff.
So these fee changes reflect the kind of the splitting out between residential and commercial uses. And so with that in mind, Jeff, why don't you walk them through these changes, if you will. You there, Jeff?
Sorry, getting unmuted here.
Good.
So basically, we have very little inspections that would be required from Sunrise Engineering. Those that they would be doing would be on a commercial basis, or if for some reason I was not available, they can fill in at any time. Commercial, if there's special inspections that I'm not certified for, particularly masonry, concrete, reinforcing, welding type inspections and commercial aspects, then we would be utilizing Sunrise Engineering for that. And consequently, those special inspections are, they cost a little bit more. So we're maintaining their services at the same rate that they have previously been charging us, but they did increase, requested an increase for the commercial inspections, $10 per hour. I don't have any other information that can answer questions if anybody has any.
So, I have a question.
Yeah.
So, on the new construction fees, it looked to me like the only thing we were really changing was the residential gas line inspection and then the permanent power or the... What was it? The gas line and
the temporary power, permanent power inspection. You're right.
Yeah. And then the other was just an hourly rate change. The commercial is an hour. Is that, what's the $65? $65 per hour or what?
Their residential rate is $53 an hour per hour.
Oh, so that's an hour, not per inspection?
Yes. So typically they'll do, 30-minute inspection with the except, well, then that would be included for like a four-way inspection. They could be there for an hour and a half, even up to 2 hours on a big project.
That's the longest inspection. Could be a couple hours easily, but yeah.
Yeah.
So right now, so we're paying them not a set fee per house. They actually give us a bill for hourly. I'm not sure. I didn't know that's how they bill. I use Sunrise and I know exactly what they do. So I'm just asking the question.
No, and that's legitimate. And they do charge by the hour. And that includes we don't get an additional travel time or fee, but typically our inspections are about 30 minutes.
Okay.
Per inspection, so four-way, you'd have three or four.
So it could be like 103. I mean, so is the residential going from 50? What was it before 53?
It is 53. There was no change on residential.
Oh, okay. It's just the commercial will go. What was the commercial at before? I'm just trying to figure out what the difference is.
It was at 53, and it's now at 65.
Okay.
Part of this is we've been contracted with Sunrise Engineering since 2015, and there haven't been any rate changes for their inspection since that time. So we make some of these adjustments in that manner as well.
And then we're raising the card file fee from 18 to 26. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
I mean, I think that's probably reasonable. I think. Probably not too many more. There's probably only weekly doing card file stuff, but
we haven't had a card file request since 2012 that I'm aware of.
Oh, really?
Card file.
What is a card file?
It's somebody that builds the same house over and over.
Okay.
Yeah.
All you're doing is just basically changing the plot plan, and the house stays the same, so they don't have to recheck the whole plan.
Gotcha.
There was a change in the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing fee that has been assessed in residential, and we wanted to remove that from residential with the understanding that the IRC code incorporates all of those within the one code versus having individual codes for commercial. So we would still charge a fee for commercial, mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, but we would omit those on a residential.
So in the future, if you call, would we now, as a builder, call the city, or are we still calling Sunrise?
Right now, we would encourage them, and we have sent notices out to call the city to schedule inspections.
Okay.
We are in the process of going paperless option, and you'd be able to do it online. That we're real close to going live with that.
With questions?
Jeff and Mike are our resident experts on that, so I'm gonna
go
with them on that one.
Go to them, yeah.
Okay. Quite a bit from the back and forth.
Yeah. No, math and construction now, I have to admit, are not my
I just happened to call an inspection today, this afternoon, so I'm like, wow.
Well, and we just redid our house and had to use Sunrise, which was not a problem, but I can see some advantages, and I think based on what we paid, this would, you know, I mean, we're going to be paying the same thing for residents, but it all seems like within a, you know, reasonable amount, so.
Yeah. All right. I will go ahead and accept a motion.
I'm happy to make the motion to approve resolution number 0105-2021A, a resolution adding, amending, or deleting certain fees to the official fees.
All right, motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Second by Councilmember Miller. This is a resolution, so we'll do a roll call. Councilmember Miller?
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Councilmember Smith?
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson?
Aye.
All right, and no, I don't think I...
You can vote.
I can?
Councilmember.
All right, and my vote is for Councilmember Ellsworth is aye. It passes, and that's our last item. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
And can I just ask a quick question for the next meeting? It's not Zoom, correct?
Yeah, this is a good question. That is going to be an in-person meeting.
And it might be a long one. Who knows?
We're trying to keep the agenda to be the selection of the new mayor to be the focal point. So anything we can punt on, we're punting.
And Chandler, just to clarify, as we come up with questions, do you want us to send those to you?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Okay.
I've also had a resident that has expressed a desire to possibly submit questions, and I said that that would be for your consideration, but I would be happy to share those questions if a resident had a certain topic or item that they wanted to be discussed. I would send those to you, and you could absolutely make the call in if you wanted to ask questions related to those.
And I'll just say, since I have put in my application, I am recusing myself from submitting questions.
So I also have a question then, because I have read two of the applications. Are we entitled to ask them a question before the meeting? Because here's my problem. It looks like I'm going to be out of town that meeting, and I'm very disappointed, but I have a flight that doesn't get to Salt Lake till like 8:30. So
it's time to sign up for that Wi-Fi on the plane. It's going to cost you like $50 an hour.
That's worth it.
I think it'd be very fair to submit questions that you're concerned with, and maybe your thoughts on the questions to the council. But I wouldn't suggest to dialogue with the candidates beforehand.
No. Okay, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, I could email that person specifically and ask how they, you know, what they feel.
Yeah, I would not do that. I would prefer that all of the dialogue and discussion and debate happen on the record.
Okay.
So but that, yeah, have someone else ask your questions and.
Yeah, I would.
That's what I'll have to do. I'm trying to change it, but it doesn't look possible.
Yeah. If you change it, we're happy to make an accommodation to call in or Zoom in somehow.
Yeah, okay. I mean, maybe if you put it on Zoom, I would do the Wi-Fi if I paused it, although it's a short flight from Portland, so I don't know. But it's just the timing was terrible, and I just discovered this very recently, so I'm very disappointed. I want to be there, so.
And Chandler, just a procedural question then. So we'll have the questions we can send in ahead of time, and obviously we can see the answers to the questions that were on the application. And then how do we, I mean, from there we can follow up and, like, ask other questions?
Because, well, you can ask any question you want in the meeting itself.
Okay. I just want to be able to, like, follow up on some of the things that were in the application, or obviously if they say something that I want more information on, I want to be able to,
absolutely, you
know, ask more questions. Okay. Great.
Are we going to be able to do a ranked choice voting on the on the new mayor?
That's horrible.
I think it's time to trial it.
trial,
yeah.
Right. Are we having a work session before?
Yes.
Okay.
We have another presenter that's presenting on voting options as part of that work session.
More voting options? All right.
Not ranked choice voting and not what you heard tonight. So you're going to get maybe the most informed voters ever.
Nice. That'd be awesome. And then we decide that night, right?
No.
You mean on mayor?
On the mayor. On the type of voting that you're going to do in the upcoming elections in 2021, no. We're gonna make that decision in March.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I think. The mayor will decide on the 19th.
We have to pick the state in April 15th, so there's no rush to do it in the next meeting.
So Ben is running that meeting on the 19th.
Right.
Sorry, Ben. But he also is a vote as
correct.
Well, right?
Correct.
So, yeah, so Ben will vote as well. Just, okay.
But then Denise would not be?
No, she can vote. I've had this conversation with our attorney, and she can vote if she wanted to.
I can vote.
Okay.
Well, I know what my vote is.
Then you might not recuse yourself. I mean, why not? I mean,
well, I would recuse from so many questions.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Denise. You haven't heard from all the candidates yet, so.
That's true. I might vote for someone else. You never know.
Anyway, that's, thank you.
Thank you. Oh, did we vote to adjourn?
We need a motion to adjourn.
Oh. I'll motion to adjourn.
Oh, all right. Motion made by Councilmember Smith.
I'll second it.
Second by Council Member Anderson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Bye. You're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.